This is the Last Word FM podcast, powered by Transmission Roundhouse. I'm Katie Stokes. One of my favourite things to do is learn about the journey of an artist, from the beginning to where they are now. The power of hindsight to see those sliding doors moments, the flickers of inspiration, and to put a name to the people that gave out opportunities. The Roundhouse is one of those phenomenal places that provide a space for people to explore and share their artistry and their work. In this episode, I spoke with CEO and Artistic Director of the Roundhouse, Marcus Davey. Here's my conversation with Marcus. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Katie Stokes, one of the Transmission Roundhouse Podcast Academy cohort. And we're here in the Roundhouse Bar and Cafe closing out the show. So we're nearly at the end of the program, and we've had such a phenomenal lineup of guests today. And it doesn't stop there, because now, last but not least, we have Marcus Davey, who is the CEO and Artistic Director of the Roundhouse Trust.
Hello.
So thank you so much for sitting down with us today and closing off the show. It's so nice to have you and be able to talk about The Last Word.
Oh, it's great to be here. And hearing Faithless upstairs, competing with Faithless. I heard some of the other interviews and kind of, you know, you get these words against the Faithless. And it made me think, you know, Faithless Maxi, who is the lead singer of Faithless, died last year, I think, or the year before. And I was listening to the words with the music upstairs, and it made me realise there was something missing upstairs. And it was maybe the words were coming from down here. So it was quite poetic in its
keeping
sense.
Keeping your focus down here.
Yeah, bringing the whole of the Roundhouse together.
Exactly. Yeah. So just a reminder for anyone that's joining us now, the Last Word Fest at the Roundhouse runs from the 6th of June until the 30th and is an incredible, incredible festival showcasing spoken word, interviews, plays and theatre, poetry, music, podcast, film and radio. And so many of the wonderful artists that we've heard today have been putting on their shows or have their shows still yet to come next week. And 2024 marks the 11th anniversary and the final hurrah of The Last Word. So I just wanted to take a walk down memory lane with you and kind of take us back to the beginning. Can you tell me about how the festival began and sort of what the vision was behind it?
Yeah, so actually it goes back really a long way. Jacob Samler Rose was doing some projects with us in local schools well before the Roundhouse reopened. The Roundhouse reopened in 2006, but this was probably like 2002 or something like that. And Jacob's doing this project called Markings and doing a lot of poetry. But in kind of like 2010, 2011, one of my colleagues here, Lucy Atkinson, was saying, you know, we should be doing something more in spoken word, because we've been doing the slam for a number of years already. And the Roundhouse Poetry Slam was already growing to be something quite big. It hadn't got to the main space yet, and I don't think we thought it probably would, but we all loved it, and we all knew this kind of new, it wasn't new, but it was newly discovered by a lot of people, and it's becoming more and more relevant for a lot of people, that spoken word was telling the stories of particularly young people in a way that other art forms wasn't. And she said, why don't we do a festival of spoken word? And I went, I've got no idea what that means, but why don't you see what it can develop into?
Run with it.
And the first year that it was on, I had really bad flu and missed it all completely. It was only like 6 days in the first year, but I was hearing these reports back, and it was just fantastic. And it grew and it grew and it grew, and it grew to a number of spaces, another shows in the main space of the Roundhouse. And for those people who've not been here, the main space of the Roundhouse, there'll be 3,000 people in there tonight for the show. The Poetry Slam final the other day, it's just one of my favourite events. 900 people came to hear young poets that basically nobody's ever heard of. Isn't that phenomenal? 900 people coming to see poets. Poetry, poets, young poets they probably have never heard of. And it was so uplifting, so exhilarating and invigorating. And I think also it's telling a kind of personal truth to people who would not necessarily understand or even be able to put their feet into the shoes of contemporary young people today, because the age range, I think, is 18 to 25. And I remember one year that we had a sponsor brought some guests, and one of these guests I was chatting to beforehand, and he said, I was just dragged along to this. I didn't want to come to it. I mean, you know, who wants to go to poetry? And in the interval, he came up to me and said, what's the prizes? What are the prizes? And I went, I told him what the prizes were for the top three. And he said, what about if I gave another £200? Or gave? He said, actually, can I give £50 to everyone and another £100 to the whatever? And he said, I didn't want to come, but this is the best event I've ever been to.
Wow.
And, you know, it is not just transformational for those young poets who may have only ever performed to 5, 10, 20, 50 people in the back of a pub or whatever it is, to suddenly be performing in front of 900 people and maybe winning £1,000 or more, mm-hmm. and coaching and mentoring and everything else. But for the audience, they're coming in and they have no idea what to expect. And it can truly, I've seen it so many times because it's happened to me, touch me to the core of my being. And I think that's the power of poetry. It opens up a doorway into the soul, and it does it in a way that lures you in through delicate words or hard words, whatever they are, but every poet is different, and you see that on the stage, and it's beautiful. I've completely gone off piece with your question, but I kind of went with it.
But it's so nice, because earlier today, Bradley, the winner of this year, came to speak to us as well, and he said poetry was not only a reflection of community, but also a creator of community, and that really feels like that's the case here at the Roundhouse, and how much the slam has grown, how much the festival has grown, and sort of starting from the slam and how it was huge even before the Last Word Fest was a concept. You know, at what point did you decide to pull in other art forms and allow other artists to showcase themselves as the poets have and develop their artistry in that way?
Yeah, so, I mean, just heads up to, you know, to Bradley. I mean, he's amazing.
Incredible. And he did his poem as well here, and it was just so capturing.
Yeah. Did he do one of the ones that he did, give me a light?
Yes.
Was it that one?
Give me
a light.
One.
Yeah, it's really touching. We do a lot of things at the Roundhouse. So we're doing, obviously, podcasting and spoken word, and we're doing film, we do music and a whole lyricism, or loads and loads of other things as well. And really, the Last Word Festival is about amazing talent that may not have been seen before, or maybe on the journey to being seen, representing all the things that we kind of do at the Roundhouse. But it's the reason why this is the last one is not because we want to stop it, because we want to do something even bigger. Mm. And we're not announcing what that is yet, but what we can say is that the Slam was 19 years old this year, so big 20th anniversary next year, and we want to do something really amazing next year in the main space. And there'll be other activities as well, including commissions and new productions in spoken word, but also in film, podcasting, music, big music events, and so on and so forth. Mm. I think there's a unique thing about the Roundhouse. It's not just the space. So anyone who's not been into the main space before or the studios that are just below it, it does take your breath away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I love that saying, which is, you don't measure your life by the number of breaths you take. You measure it by the number of times your breath is taken away. And the number of times I walk into the main space, my breath has been taken away, even though I've been here for years. I mean, I often go in there and I sort of go, oh my God, can you imagine what it would be like to work here? And I sort of go, oh my God, I do. And I'm really lucky. The other things are that we work with world-class artists alongside and with emerging talent, young people, in a whole range of art forms. When those three things link together, artists, whether they're emerging or world-class already, you can be world-class and emerging, but world-famous, shall we say, in the beautiful Roundhouse main space, something truly magical happens with an audience. And I think it's because it's not, like, got private boxes and it's not got kind of velvet seats. It feels like a much more democratic space. It's like the ancient spaces. It's whether you'll be under a tree where the first theatre started in Africa, or going into into Greece, the open-air theatres. It's that round democratic space. And when you have artists communicating in that space, which is not got the private boxes and the red velvet, it feels really open and accessible. Mm. But I would say that because I work here. But you know,
and you
I
can
hope
also
agree.
Say if you've ever gone on stage and had a cheeky performance when no one's in there, you can admit that here.
Well, I'm actually looking at my son over there, and the first time I took him into the main space, the musician Ray Davis from the Kinks was rehearsing. He was only a baby, and Ray was quiet, and then he suddenly went like this and. Solly over there screamed and said, "Take me out, stop that horrible machine." So I have seen some truly awesome things, but sometimes they haven't quite worked out as I thought they would.
You can't plan everything. But as you were saying that, you know, you're inviting world-class performers and artists and also upcoming and those who are both at the same time, do you find that with the growing, because the Roundhouse supports artists in their growth and discovery and opportunity to showcase themselves and also discover themselves, do you also find that it facilitates the change of the art? Because we've heard so much today about how poetry, people have gone to school and read poetry and learned about poetry as one thing, and that's very much 300 years ago, or things that don't really reflect themselves or their communities. And through the slam, it seems, and also through inviting poets from around the country, the art form itself is changing, and that seems to be the case in other art forms as well, radio, podcasting, and theatre as well. Do you find that that's kind of a goal as well of the Roundhouse, to not only discover and change the artist, but change the art form?
Yes, and I'd answer that in a number of different ways. One, if you look back through the history of the Roundhouse, the first ever event that was held here in the main space was on the 15th of October, 1966. It was the launch of a counterculture magazine. And the big band of the day, Soft Machine, played an evening gig. Paul McCartney was dressed up, Marianne Faithfull, and all these kind of legends were in the audience as young people. And the main act that evening later on was a band that had done a couple of little, you know, back of pub gigs, and they played all night for a kind of psychedelic light show, and that was Pink Floyd. So the psychedelia movement felt that it could start at the Roundhouse, mm-hmm. because it was an open, democratic, free space. 10 years later, on the 4th of July, 1976, the Ramones gave the first ever British performance, and in the audience there were all these other musicians, and the explosion of punk happened. And I would say that spoken word is that kind of combination of punk and lyricism, you know, do it yourself. It has exploded at the Roundhouse. And I think there's another reason for that is, yes, we nurture talent, but the staff, colleagues, and I have are just so brilliant at nurturing ideas and pulling out of people their abilities, you know, building on their strengths and saying, well, have you thought about that? So, yeah, definitely stuff is happening that I hope that I don't understand. I'll learn something from. In fact, I'm learning stuff all the time about what we're doing. And I don't know whether many young artists now would say that they describe themselves as just a theatre maker or just a filmmaker or just a poet. You know, you look at Caleb Femi, who a few years ago was a poet in all our minds, but he's a filmmaker and a theatre maker and many, many other things as well. And I think that's great because it means we're learning to develop new art forms and ways of thinking, ways of being and interacting with the digital sphere and the digital world as well. And it's illuminating bits of art form to people who aren't just in the room. Mm. And I think that's great. I must admit, I love being in the room for art. I think during lockdown, it was quite difficult to experience art just on a computer, even though that was life-saving in so many ways. But the idea of being in a room with 100 people, 3,000 people, all experiencing something together is life-changing.
And you really feel the difference. I think even, you know, being here, hearing a few poems today, it's just so electrifying in an environment. Mm. And so speaking of sort of changing and people being multi-hyphenates and changing the art form and changing art itself, in that culture of change and inclusion, what has it meant to you, I suppose, to have sort of specifically for the slam, to have the heats across the country and also online and finding that new talent and changing, again, what has been so London central a lot of the time, to really going out across the country, inviting people to come, finding that talent and giving the opportunity to for people to showcase themselves maybe where they hadn't thought they would be able to before.
What we all know is that we're all born talented, aren't we?
Mm.
We're all born with exactly the same talent. Whoever your parents are, doesn't matter, you're born with the same talent. Opportunity is sprinkled far and few and far between. The nurturing, the opportunities, whether it's at school or in other places, it's not fair. The world is really not fair and it's got much worse. So people who are born 20 years ago have no idea what it was like for the people who were born 20 years before because they had many more opportunities in schools. You know, something like 45,000 less GCSEs being taken in creative subjects in the last year. I think every bit of creativity, every act of making, every act of performance is a moment of resistance against the crap that is going on in society because it brings people together to make something, to be together for something positive. And I think that is so powerful. So when I go and see stuff or I see people making stuff, I think it's the most important thing in our society. Of course, there's health and security and all those things, but if you take those as given and food and accommodation, that's really so much tougher now than it was even 10 years ago. But there's something about we're born to make. And I think there's different forms of creativity as well. Again, I'm going off piste with your question. But there's problem-solving creativity, which is you look at a problem and think, OK, I've been commissioned to make a pot, and now I need to make a pot. OK, I'm looking at a pot, by the way. Or there's the other bit, which is you're giving a piece of blank paper and you say, write something on it. And that takes an amazing leap of faith. And it takes that leap of faith to say, I have an idea, and now I'm going to craft something which I can share. And these things should be nurtured and developed and nurtured and developed because we are intrinsically creative people. Everyone is creative. And what if we took creativity out of society, let's just imagine what the world would look like. If we took art out of society, the creative. Now, we'd all be naked because clothes are designed. We go down the road, there'd be no buildings because they're designed. There'd be no cars because they're designed. There'd be no furniture because that's designed. There would be no paintings on the walls. There'd be no poems. There'd be no theatre. There'd be no sculpture. There'd be no et cetera, et cetera. There'd be no beautiful labels on records or, you know, records. What am I talking about? It's all digital. But anyway, I like a vinyl or something like that. There'd be nothing on a bottle. You know, all these things. This is how we are intrinsically creative. And I think what the Roundhouse does brilliantly is to be that opportunity, be that place of opportunity where there's amazing facilities. But what we want young people to feel is that that is normal.
Mm.
And actually, when there's a whole group of young people together feeling it's normal, then extraordinary things happen. We know extraordinary things happen because we just look back over the many years we've been operating and the thousands and thousands of young people who come through the Roundhouse now are, you know, running arts organisations. They're internationally acclaimed theatre makers. They are brilliant teachers. They're accountants and train drivers. They are fulfilling something important inside them with confidence, resilience and self-esteem. And I think that's the power of what we do.
Mm.
That wasn't your question, but I've gone on there anyway.
We'll take it. And looking at sort of all of those impressive and wonderful people who have had those opportunities, do you have any standout or top moments that you can think of from your many years at the Last Word Fest?
Oh,
and if
yes.
You need a minute, I've got a few things to jog your memory.
Oh yeah, go on.
Yeah. So Jack Prideaux, who's the lead programmer for the Loud Word Fest, has been kind enough to share a few memories. So he said, I've been working on the festival since 2017, and it's so hard to pick one highlight, but a few that sum up the festival are one, Saul Williams headlining and judging the Poetry Slam in 2017. Saul is a legend of spoken word and an influence on so many artists. Another one is the Speakers Corner Quartet headlining in 2023, an incredible collective of musicians who individually have contributed so much to music and spoken word through their work with other artists And it was a real moment to be able to celebrate their debut album. The Receipts podcast selling out in 30 minutes in 2022, which is insane. And having the main space felt like a culmination of a journey that we'd been on to broaden the focus of the festival. It's quite poetic himself. To take in the spoken word more broadly. And the real magic of the festival is programming work by brilliant emerging voices alongside higher profile moments like the ones I've mentioned, and the shows by resident artists are a highlight every year.
Well, that's fantastic. I think, you know, all praise to Jack and to Rena, to Derek and Tom and other people in the team who make this happen, and it's not me that makes it happen. I make the Roundhouse happen, they make this happen, and it's incredible. My highlights, I think, were seeing Suhaima Mansour Khan, who actually came second in the Poetry Slam, and her poem that she did, which was, if you've not seen it, it is transformational, was then seen by tens of millions of people around the world. Vanessa Kinsule, winning the Poetry Slam 10 years ago, the poem about Jenga, but, you know. Talia Randall. Yeah. I remember this poem she did about Hereditary, and talked about there's something about pigeons flying around and landing on the streets, and then she realised they're eating chicken bones, nibbling at chicken bones, and, you know, just the whole idea that our society had gone wrong somewhere along the way. I think there's so many moments. Many of them are very intimate, and they aren't big scale. In the early days, seeing one of the early workshops of Inua Elam's plays, I think we did his first play, workshops of his first plays, or Kay Tempest plays. You know, so having a relationship with some of those people for many, 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 many years. And actually, seeing Derek there, we went to see Red Pitch, didn't we, together, down at the Bush. And it's a fantastic play. Sorry, Derek? Terrell Williams. You introduced him as somebody else, but we'll forget that. I'll ask him, go, oh, it's Terrell, I'm going to meet Terrell Williams. And then Derek said, well, of course you'll have met him when he was on one of Derek's programs at the Roundhouse doing something else. And I go, of course, you know. But it was a great moment to see that these brilliant people who are quite, they're undiscovered because they're young and just on their journey. But when people say, you know, talk about young people, it's a very strange phrase to say young people, because if you think artists like Kate Bush, you know, world famous, much loved pop musician, she wrote one of her most famous songs when she was 13 years old, A Man with a Child in Her Eyes. You know, 13 years old. Makes me feel a complete failure the whole of my life. But that creativity never loses us. And if we want to re-emerge into it at some time, that creativity is like pulling it from the clouds and the sky all around us. It's all around us. Whether we choose to interact with it is another matter. Whether we have the ability to interact with it, or whether society or the situation in our lives allows us to interact with it. You know, you might be bringing up some kids, you might have a difficult situation, but all those things can pour into something truly remarkable, and it doesn't have to be shared with anyone else. Some of the great things that have been heard in our lives or read in our lives, you know, it's amazing books being written by the first-time author when they're in their 70s. You know, it's there to be grabbed.
Yeah, and that is so reflective of kind of what happens here at the Roundhouse, and people finding that creativity, interacting with it. And I read that this year is your 25th year anniversary at the Roundhouse. So congratulations.
Thank you
happy
very much.
Anniversary.
Yeah, I was hoping nobody mentioned that. I'm only 25 now.
Exactly. So. It's incredible. But just sort of as a final, to wrap up the interview, just what does that mean for you to have seen the Roundhouse itself and the festival change so much, and sort of what's next for the festival?
Well, I talk about transformation, and it's been transformational for my life working here, really. It's quite a very emotional question, really, to ask. it's been everything to me in a work space, and to be able to be somewhere where new and creative things happen all the time, where I'm challenged and kept refreshed and young in my mind, has been the biggest privilege of a life, really. To work in the Roundhouse is, without doubt, the biggest privilege that anyone could possibly have, and I feel that every single day.
Amazing. Thank you so much for chatting, Marcus.
Thank
you. This has been so, so lovely.
If you want to learn more about the Roundhouse, you can visit roundhouse.org.uk. I'm Katie Stokes. I'm producing a podcast for Transmission Roundhouse. Thank you so much for tuning into this series of Backstage at the Roundhouse. I hope you enjoyed our conversations with these incredible people creating incredible things. The Last Word FM is powered by Transmission Roundhouse and part of the Last Word Festival program at the Roundhouse.